The best way to predict the future is to invent it. Stephen Ambrose brings you up to speed on what the future holds as he explores the latest technology as it impacts our lives.
Well, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk right here on IFM. And as usual, we are your go-to source for the latest in technology and all sorts of impacts that has on everyday life. And I'll try to bring you more and more insights into a rapidly changing AI infrastructure, an AI landscape more than anything. I mean, it has impacts on everything. Everything we do, everything we consume, every interaction we have with suppliers, with people we work with governments, with cities, you name it. AI is fundamentally reshaping the way that we do pretty much everything in our daily lives. And I mean, technology is pervasive. All of us use it. We wear it. We connect to it. We talk to it. And it's just getting more and more embedded into the absolute fabric of everything that we do. We'll talk a bit about that later because agentic AI, which I've spoken about, is rising quicker than anyone could have imagined. And along with a whole lot of other platforms and things that are going on in that space. But let's look at what has happened in the past week. And let's focus on some of these developments that could really, you know, create a little bit of interest for you. Starlink, as usual, always in the news. They're obviously rolling out a massive drive for faster, lower latency, more powerful satellites. I mean, they're replacing satellites on a pretty much daily basis globally. South Africa is still embedded in the sort of BEE structures and the ability for Starlink to operate. But globally, they keep adding more and more and more countries, airplanes, more places where you can connect. However, they haven't got it all their own way. There are a number of other platforms that are emerging, some strong ones from China. Whether they'll ever hit the scale or the global acceptance something like Starlink has, no, that remains to be seen. But more sort of focused and niche platforms are coming, low Earth satellites. Mobile companies are working with these so-called low Earth orbital satellites, or LEOs, to try to bring connectivity to everywhere, to anyone, no matter if you can see the sky. With a standard cell phone, you can make calls. That's already working and is being trialed by a number of players in the US and other countries around the world. It will really make a difference in rural areas like South Africa, where it's super expensive to supply necessary infrastructure. The management and cost of handling all that becomes pretty near impossible in some deep rural areas and mountainous areas. And imagine if all of that could be offloaded to a satellite system, which is centrally managed, easy to use, and works on standard cell phones, which is the big deal. So that is definitely coming over the next little while. And for the most part, for you and me, for the average user, it will be pretty seamless. When you move out of cell phone tower coverage, your phone will just automatically connect to a satellite. They'll offer you voice and data calls. At the moment, a little bit restricted from using voice, but that's all coming very soon. And we're going to see more and more of this. But the scale at which our friends at Starlink are rolling out definitely indicates that they're pushing incredibly hard into many, many, many areas. And I can only hope that some, as we've discussed many times, some sanity prevails and the various regulators and the who heads out there figure out a way to bring this and other, because they're not only blocking Starlink, unfortunately, they're blocking all of the various satellite providers. Recently, I also read they were trying to get some of the international airlines to pull into the whole transformative agenda and the BEE qualification criteria to operate in the country. So there's definitely a disconnect between reality and practice. And let's see if that applied to something like connectivity could certainly transform what we do on a day-to-day basis. And as part of that whole thing, which makes a lot of sense, following this market for years, the eSIM market was something that a lot of people sort of didn't really talk about. It's become a massive player in the global roaming. Really getting my words muddled. But in the global roaming platform, if you leave the country and you've got a fairly modern cell phone, you can use eSIMs, and you want to go somewhere, wherever it is, you download and eat some, you put it on your phone. When you land in this country for moderate money, a couple of $10, $20, you can have seamless connectivity, not voice, but certainly data, which gives you WhatsApp and voice by default, pretty much. And you connect to maps and do everything. But all of this is based on the eSIM platform, and there's just no question that even in South Africa, the eSIMs are disappearing at a rapid rate. More and more of the mobile networks are making it much easier to get eSIMs. And the best part is they can be provisioned. You don't have to go into the store. I know that a lot of the networks would like to get you into the stores. I think they have this outdated notion that if you come in, you'll spend more money. And for the most part, they're not incorrect. You know, you're in the store, you buy a new phone, you upgrade your package, you get a new SIM card, you buy a cable, you buy a cover. Physical contact definitely seems to create possibilities for retail. But in truth, the convenience of being able to, oh, you lost your phone, or your SIM stopped working, or there's a problem, you want a provision, you just download an eSIM, very simple, or they push it to you, or you upgrade from phone to phone. Even now, what really has changed is that when you upgrade your phone, you can transfer based on the iOS and Android systems. You can transfer your eSIM from your old phone to your new phone without provisioning a new one. But again, provisioning a new SIM was not much of a hassle. You could theoretically just tell the network you need a new eSIM, that they send you a QR code, you scan it, and boop, it pops up on your phone, and you can use it pretty much instantly. So many manufacturers are starting to consider, and in fact, iPhone has now started to cut eSIM, physical SIM slots out of their phones. In the US, from the 14 onwards, they've not had SIM slots. And now that the 17 models definitely have no actual physical SIM slots, they're using that to enhance the battery size, give you a little bit more battery life. And that's, at the moment, only in the US. The models we get here in South Africa and other places still have SIM slots because it's still fairly dominant. But if you buy the iPhone 17 Air globally, because of its thinness, because of its compactness, it has no SIM slot. So the only thing you can do, remember this if you're looking at it, because a lot of people I've spoken to are really keen on a super slim phone that has no SIM slot. The best part of an eSIM, you can have many eSIMs on your phone, I think up to 10 in some cases. However, you can only activate two at a time. So you can have dual SIM functionality, keep your home SIM going, your travel SIM running, but you can't have more than one physical SIM plus an eSIM or two eSIMs running at any point in time. But that should be enough for most people. You know, one SIM's enough to deal with all the spam calls and whatnot happening at the moment. But definitely there is a push, and I expect over the next year or two to absolutely see SIMs, the physical old plastic SIM, pretty much becoming one of those little bits and pieces of the past, and the eSIM takes over. And the last little bit of really interesting news that was launched this week is that the Aura Ring, which is a health ring, and I don't know if I've actually spoken about it because it wasn't really available in South Africa. It's one of the high-end versions of a health tracker that fits on a ring. Samsung released one recently. I think it's had moderate success, but it really hasn't taken over. There are a ton of cheap ones, but their battery life is dodgy. Their reporting is a bit strange. But the Aura Ring has been known as one of the top rings, health rings around the world with the most sensors. They're already on version 4 of the Aura Ring, which gives you enormous amount of insight into your sleep, into all sorts of things. Now, Discovery have decided that sleep is the next big thing to reward you on. So if you're a Discovery member and you're part of their Vitality thing, now buy the Aura Ring. They'll pay for the monthly subscription, and they'll pay for the ring based on a whole huge list of criteria. But watch the space. There'll be more and more of it. Check it out if you want to track your sleep, because apparently this is now the new frontier in health, and what has been for a while, but it's been really focused. So we're going to have a quick live read now before the ad break, but I'll try to talk a little bit more about the Discovery Aura Ring launch, because it's live now and you can actually see it on their website. So before we break for sponsors and we get into agentic AI kicking humans out of business? Well, we'll talk about that straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. And for the Tech Talk segment today, I actually tried to get one of the leading proponents of AI and just discussing it on the show. I'll keep that secret for now because I'm going to get them on the show shortly. But what I want to talk about, and we've discussed into the whole growth of AI agents, and I must set the stage before we get into that, because everything is pretty much developmental. Less, just over 2 years ago, AI hit the mainstream with ChatGPT and LLMs. It was just the buzzword that everyone was talking about. You could actually ask your computer a very complex question, and you'd get this incredibly detailed and well thought out answer based on large language models from your computer to do pretty much everything. Well, roll forward 2.5 years later. Now LLMs, or AI as they call it, it's just generally called AI. And it's not true AI. Let's just say that right up front. But these platforms are now embedded into absolutely everything. People use ChatGPT, Perplexity, or Grok, or whatever, the Llama from friends at Facebook. There are so many models on the market. Businesses are embedding them into every single platform. We all, instead of doing a straight Google search, in fact, if you just do a Google search, the first thing you see pretty much is an AI summary of everything you're looking for. And then if you really find that you want to start looking at links and in the usual fashion, that list of places where your query would be useful, you can. Or you can continue engaging with the AI that's built into pretty much every browser on your phone, on your computer, and you can get detailed information and all the homework you used to do of 20 or 30 websites that you trawled through to get what you wanted to know is summarized neatly. The dangers of all this are fairly immense, because it tends to, like all major technology shifts, bring out the pros and the cons, not what we're going to talk about today. But essentially, what is emerging through all of this are autonomous agents, or agentic AI, which is starting to do things without human supervision. And one of the areas that I've been looking at, and actually wrote an article in Business Brief, are a subscriber, you can get it. And I'm going to base what we're talking about here around that article. But the point being, are humans necessary anymore in the AI, or specifically agentic AI, in our daily interactions? And what we are discussing here is essentially what happens when you set up an agent in your AI to do something autonomously. You give it agency, give it the authority to go out and talk to another company's AI, not to a person, but to another AI that has similar agency and or capacity to contract. So, for example, if you take a company that's active in, you know, there's so many different elements or aspects of this, but let's say you have a scenario where you have a company that, like ShopRite, for example, they use AI to forecast their inventory needs and then directly get involved in negotiating those particular needs with an AI for one of their suppliers, London, doesn't matter where it is in the world, in South Africa, and to negotiate and to arrange and to set up the shipping and do all the sort of mundane tasks that used to be done by different people. And all of this without the intervention of humans, and they collaborate with minimal supervision. So this is a future that, as far as I can see, is coming really rapidly. We're going to see in the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to see solid growth in this. And it's already had an impact on the employment market. The low-end entry-level employment market globally has started to slow down. Some of the statistics are coming out of that. I think partially it has been due to a realignment of many, many factors, downturns in economies, insourcing of many models. But fundamentally, underlying all of this is that so many mundane tasks are being automated through AI And that is going to rise slowly and surely up the permission chain in a business to get to the point where theoretically you won't do any audits, you won't negotiate any contracts. All of those things are going to be happening autonomously between your agent, their agent, and other agents within the structures that can take care of things. So these tools are not just intelligent things, but they're active. They're empowered to negotiate, transact, and collaborate with minimal human supervision. But I think that's where it starts getting super interesting. And the real fact is that this has been rising rapidly everywhere, but no less so in South Africa. Every platform at larger companies and even smaller companies, Office 365, for example, has a massive AI component that offers to rewrite everything you do. So it's growing faster and faster and faster. And most of the retailers use AI to predict needs. Financial institutions like the banks have absolutely at their core got AI and have been using AI for a long time to expedite fraud detection, all sorts of things. And the whole digital economy, driven by advancements in Vodacom and others, 5G networks and all the cloud infrastructures that are emerging, all the data centers that are growing. Teraco, for example, have doubled the size of their data center near the airport, and many other data centers and sort of enhancements to existing data centers is happening. And in this area, it is projected that around about 20%, if not more, of South Africa's GDP is going to be somehow managed or handled through GDP, through AI. And the GDP of other global players around the world, certainly in the more mature technology markets like Europe, China, America, these are even more likely to become embedded with AI. So exceeding 20% of their GDP is linked to AI. But this new era where AIs interact directly, they trade without any human intervention, is a significant shift. And we're going to see a lot of things rising out of that. The first thing that we need to discuss, and I think people should be very aware of, is there are massive cybersecurity risks. As this autonomy increases, the risks are going to rise exponentially. But the good news is that in South Africa, well, this is not good news, but the fact is in South Africa, 2 billion rands losses have been in the last year or so due to cybercrime. And that makes AI systems even more critical in managing it, because the bad actors in the space are using AI, and the companies need to really build all this type of platforms to deal with these attacks at a scale that human beings actually can't manage. And that's the key thing. So the agents and the AI that's built into the detection platforms are the things that are going to protect you rather than actually harm you. So cybersecurity and the risks and the safeguards built in there. The premise of this is that humans are still going to be vital in guiding and managing all this. But commerce and logistics have been completely transformed already and going to go further. So imagine a retailer's AI in Durban negotiating with suppliers' AI in China. You buy from them, all the parameters are set up. You let it happen. It adjusts deal terms as the rand fluctuates, or with mining as the commodity prices move, and reroutes the shipments based on costs and parameters like time and a whole lot of stuff. And all of this is happening. Now, there's a company in South Africa called Peach Payments. You can check it out. And they launched in August 2025 an instant AI-driven payments platform. Again, more and more of these are going to emerge, and payment platforms and various marketplaces are going to emerge where AIs will trade. It absolutely sounds like science fiction, but it's coming, and it's happening quite quickly. So where hundreds of AIs will trade, set prices, manage logistics, also at a scale and a speed that human beings absolutely can't manage. And this will dramatically boost efficiency. So for example, you won't have to worry about your local Checkers or Pick and Pay having stock. It will be automatically, based on all the history, based on everything that's going on in the stores, based on sales, based on traffic pattern, based on weather, based on any number of things. They will always make sure those 10 bottles of XYZ sitting on the shelf and are replenished on time with minimal effort. The manufacturer will be informed in good time. He will be able to use his AIs to pick up the raw materials and the entire supply chain absolutely improve dramatically. And the e-commerce industry is round about $10 billion in South Africa. And you can imagine that when you place something, you place an order for something online, and its quickness of delivery, where the stock is held, who supplies those things, is all being handled already by platforms, will only get enhanced through agentic AI and other AI platforms. And the impact for all businesses is absolutely insane. But the benefit for you and me out there is that out of stocks should become a thing of the past. New products should get on the shelves in a managed manner. Stock inventories across wholesalers and retailers should be efficiently optimized, allowing better profits, lower costs. So in all respects, this is just absolutely brilliant. But the biggest challenges that we're going to face, and you can see it right now, most of the LLMs, most of the ChatGPTs and all the rest are pretty similar overall. You give the instruction to all of them, you get a slightly different tone, but pretty much similar information. But interoperability between these platforms is going to become essential. There are no universal APIs. Those are the connectors that take companies and people and computers to talk to each other. So you, if you have an API in the one, it talks to the API in the other, and those things talk to each other and manage the communication. So if the all the systems remain isolated, it becomes really difficult to grow with this. But international organizations like ISO are developing these standards, and all companies should, and all of us, if we're involved in this, should avoid vendor lock-in. We should try to make sure that we're not locked into one particular vendor, because you might not be able to interoperate with tons and tons of other things. So there are a lot of little details in order for this to work really seamlessly. But the most important thing for me is, apart from the governance and legal channels, now the sad thing is that most government regulation, the AI Act in Europe, something similar will come to South Africa in a little while. The same way as GDPR first came out in South Africa, that was the whole privacy thing. Then it became the Blockier Act in South Africa, or it emerged thereafter. But the managing of all of this is always laggy in terms of the actual impact of it. First, you've got to make it, but then once it starts operating, you then land up regulating. But all of us and all businesses have to set legal and practical boundaries to define these capabilities. And that is the evolving human role. Maybe you won't have people sending emails, working on spreadsheets, placing orders, doing all sorts of manual stuff, because the new agentic AI platforms will take care of that instantly. But rather than people are going to have to get new skills and become very proficient in overseeing AI systems, they've got to set operational boundaries. They've got to authorize spending limits or deal types. So what you have to do right up front is specify and manage all of your necessary needs that you feed into the AI. And then the AI can go out within very specific and defined boundaries, including negotiations of the agentic style of AI that cannot operate beyond certain parameters. And once those parameters are breached, for whatever reason, the human being is brought back in. The problem for most people will be that they will be brought in at a much higher level. So a lot of the universities' AI hubs are equipping thousands of people for this emerging role. These discussions are happening. I was looking at some of the good stuff that's going on. And there's no question that the nature and style of what you learn and the processes and platforms that you work are all evolving quite quickly along with everything. But you have to ensure ethical compliance, legal compliance. And reskilling is going to become a huge new opportunity for most companies. The amount of people that are going to have to learn new ways of doing business, new platforms, in some cases, there will be job losses. But like when the internet came out, what will happen is new opportunities will emerge across multiple platforms everywhere. So learning new things, understanding what's happening in the job market, understanding what's happening in the technology market, listening to programs such as these, and getting some insight into what is transpiring in the world that you live in. So if you're a young entrepreneur and you're trying to break into a market, you really need to understand. If you're an established business with a lot of staff doing all sorts of things, you need to be very aware of the fact that your staff are going to need some significant training. The company's going to need governance structures. Now, that sounds very corporate, but it's not corporate. In every single aspect, if you accept that your new accounting and ordering platform has got agentic AI built into its core and things are happening out there, you need to understand how to instruct, manage, monitor, and work through some form of observability platform, some form of structured playbook, if you want to call it that, of how these things interact. Because the efficiencies you want the speed, you want the best price, you want the quickest to market, you want all these good things. And the AIs can physically or internally in their systems negotiate that, but the parameters have to be set in a clear and transparent manner in a way that you can trust these decisions. And when they're breached, there is an absolute protocol to fix it, because nothing kills business than an unanswered question, which could potentially block all deals or potentially create deals that cost you money or cost you time or somehow mess up the flow of what you're doing out there. So in summary, unfortunately, 20 minutes is not enough to talk about something this transformative. But from the infrastructure, and I can tell you, globally and in South Africa, the infrastructure to host, run, and manage these platforms is there. Communication between satellite, between 5G, between fiber is there. And the programs that take care of these and the quality and quantity of the AIs is growing enormously. Businesses need to actually reskill, educate, and understand how best to get the most out of these platforms for their businesses. Governments will follow with rules and regulations and all sorts of things. But fundamentally, if you start now with these platforms and you're very clear in your objectives, it takes a different style of thinking. You're going to find a ton of ways for you to optimize your efficiencies, make your businesses more robust, improve your service to your customers, get better service as a customer, be it through bots or whatever it is that you interact with. We're going to see some pretty transformative stuff coming in the way that we do things in the world going forward. So that's my story about it. We can always discuss this some more in future programs. But right now, I've got a quick break for our sponsors. I've got a nice...
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM. This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Well, welcome back. Apparently, we had some problems with my microphone, but anyway, it seems to be up and running again. As I was saying a little earlier, gadget of the week is a cell phone that I've been playing with for the last few weeks. It was launched a little while ago, and it was a very controversial phone for me. I unashamedly am an iPhone man, have the 16, playing with a 17. So I really do enjoy the iOS ecosystem. But for the same time, I have a vast range of Android phones on my desk, and I play with them all the time. And I use Samsung Galaxy S25 pretty much as a daily driver, and it is an incredible phone. The latest version of Android is slick and smooth. The interface that Samsung use is super effective. And for the most part, the two operating systems are incredibly equivalent in apps, in functionality, and overall use. Android does give the user, the geek user, a lot more ability to customize, fiddle around, do things. Also, the built-in AI in the latest version of Samsung phones is, I think, a lot more advanced than what's going on in the iOS space. Apple Intelligence definitely is coming along in leaps and bounds. The latest versions are starting to bring a lot of the functionality that you take for granted in some of the Android or Google-based AI that's in the Samsung phones. So equivalence is close, but it is the form factor that has become super interesting. And I've been playing with a Galaxy Z Fold 7 for a few weeks. And I must say that right up front, I don't have a lot of time to go into all the details and the bits and pieces. We've discussed it. It's all available online. But this is the thinnest, best-built foldable device on the market currently that I've played with. It is solid. The hinge is something spectacular. The screen has hardly any crease. It used to be quite noticeable off angle. If you looked at it directly, you couldn't see it. If you looked slightly, turned the phone slightly to an angle, you could see it quite clearly. But now it's pretty much indistinguishable. You can't see it. And when you close the phone, it feels size-wise and in terms of weight like a normal phone. The front screen is brilliant, and you can operate it pretty much identically from that point. However, it does come, compared to a standard top-end phone, with a bit of a downside. The downside is it's big, and when you open it, you get this massive internal screen that you pretty much have to operate like a tablet. So if you do, without going to any of the technical things, my recommendation is this. If you do a ton of work on your phone and you don't use tablets or computers, or you're traveling a lot and you find you need something that you can really get stuck into work, whatever that work may be, then a massive foldable phone with an internal screen that can open up like a tablet can be incredibly useful. The functionality across the S25 Samsung and the Galaxy Z Fold 7 has now become even closer. The cameras are all very similar, so the quality of pictures is spectacular on both. You'll find that the speed and the functionality using the same chipsets and the same processors is again something that is hardly distinguishable between the two. The screen itself is really incredibly good looking. The resolution is spectacular. The outside and the back is protected by the same hardened glass. And we are definitely seeing a maturity in this product that goes way beyond pretty much anything. Again, the Samsung ecosystem is brilliant. You see incredible ability for payments, for all sorts of things. It's simple, it's easy to use, along with the health apps and everything else that's built in there. Galaxy S7 is only really a little bit thicker, each element, than the USB-C plug. So it's pretty insane. And the front, the flexible 8-inch screen is incredibly crisp and bright. So from that point of view, it is ideal if you need lots of multitasking. It's got tons of memory. You can get in different storage options. I would recommend now, for all phones, a 512 gigabyte is becoming more and more the norm. Lots of high-res videos, lots of high-res pictures, lots of complicated apps, and also the ability for the internal AI platforms to store and manage memory is greater. Obviously, eSIMs and SIMs and all that stuff. So to wrap it up, this is one incredible phone. It uses the latest of Android 16 and the UI 8. From Samsung. It's incredibly easy to use. It's very intuitive. The AI is spectacular. The screen is massive. And if you need it, it is a brilliant, brilliant phone. If it's not something you need, I would say stick with a candy bar phone like the iPhones or the Samsung Galaxy S25 or even the 24. They're very, very similar overall in functionality. But if you want to have the latest and the best and you want to wow your friends with this brilliant thing you open and you've got this massive phone, massive screen in your pocket, then the new Fold 7 is without question a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant device. So before we wrap that up, let me give you our last live read for the day. And it's quite a biggie. It has been 2 years since the atrocities of October the 7th. This year, the South African Zionist Federation invites you to come together to honor the victims through the power of music. Please join us for an emotional communal event featuring a 20-piece orchestra, guest vocalists, and a special violin performance by release hostage Agam Burger. The musical tribute will take place on Thursday, the 16th of October at 6:30. Tickets are free, but booking is essential. The gates open at 5:30. For more information, go to www.sazf.org/October 7th. I'll repeat that. www.sazf.org /October7. So join us for an unforgettable evening, proudly brought to you by the South African Zionist Federation.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Well, welcome back. And just to give a quick wrap up on the Fold 7, the Samsung Galaxy Fold 7, which is really an impressive device. Whether I'd use it full time, I don't need a device with a big inside tablet capability, but that's my own personal view. The good news is that it is getting some decent price cuts across the globe, and I'm sure some of them will come to South Africa really soon, because the one fly in the ointment, this is a 40,000 Rand plus premium device. So the packages from the various networks make it a little bit more affordable on a month-to-month basis, but no question that it is absolutely at the top end of high-end phones, and it's a serious commitment. But overall, Samsung have really, the last few versions have been a little bit significant. Physically, technologically, feature set, and in usability, a huge jump over any one of the Fold devices they've launched to date. You sort of expect that with a device that comes out at that sort of price level. But they've really hit everything. There are very few niggles. It's extremely pleasant to use. It's a very powerful, capable device, and it can really transform your life. Again, if your workflow and what you do works in this favor, or if you just want to impress the neighbors and friends and family, definitely works for that. So moving on to just closing off for the day, and just to give you a little bit of some practical hints and tips, but all of us need to work with tech, and the rise of AI, and sadly, the rise of AI has spurred a whole new range of phishing and all sorts of nonsense in terms of trying and cybersecurity problems and things that are trying to create hassles for you. You're getting phone calls from the bank. I know these days a lot of us are about, oh, they've detected fraud and they take you through a whole platform in the system and ask you information, bamboozle you. No bank would do that, so never. So the first thing is, if anyone phones you and tries to take you through a fraud thing, say, look, you're terribly busy, I'll phone the bank direct in as soon as I can stop. I'm walking, talking, driving, whatever. And do that. Phone the bank, check that your account is in order and that no fraud's been reported. Or if there is, deal with it directly with your call to the bank. Don't let people send that to you. Also, you really need, because of the nature of how quickly the cybersecurity environment is moving, you need to update your devices to the latest patches and features. Now, there have been cases in the past where the latest operating systems have broken things, but the reports of that become so rare and so unusual, and that's also on your laptop, on your desktop, on every device that you use, that honestly, it's a very remote problem for the most part. And I sadly hope that none of you have these problems, but always update your software for the latest security patches and features. Leave auto update on and use AI tools in apps like mail clients to summarize long threads and give you information quickly. And then again, always back up everything to the cloud. So if you've got a cloud, whatever it is, just make sure your pictures or your mail, everything is backed up to the cloud. And on that note, hate to leave on a warning, but we live in a crazy world where AI is driving absolutely everything, including cybersecurity. You really need to be a little bit more vigilant, a little bit more on top of things, and make sure that all your software is up to date, everything is backed up, and make sure that you don't land up in situations where you get fooled into giving away, you know, the crown jewels and your information around your bank. And on that note, I'm afraid we have reached the end of this show. Please stay tuned to IFM in general, but specifically, I'm here every Thursday to give you the latest updates in technology and the latest gadgets and gizmos to play with. So this is Stephen Ambrose for Tech Talk right here on IFM.